Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, as you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fishing Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and tonight we're having an awesome crew chat. We've got both Ara and Brad with us, who haven't been on in a while, but we're excited to have them on. I think first things first, we'll go ahead and do some news and updates. We'll give everybody sort of the chance to chat and give some updates on what's going on in their part of the world. For me, we are literally on the verge of elk season, so it's just moments before I can smell the sweet, sweet mountain air that's just in the distance. I can see the mountains, but I haven't made it there yet. But no, it's happening here pretty soon, and I'm very excited about it. Outside of that, doing a bit of traveling and then coming back for some backpacking with AJ and Ben. So excited for that. But
nice.
Got my cooking class coming up tomorrow, which I'm pretty stoked about. So I'm doing some venison heart breakdown over in our Harvesting Nature Supper Club. You can go hit that up. There's the link in the show notes there. And actually, Ara, be sure to mention your class and what's going on there, because I think subsequently this will release the week preceding your class, so it'll be some good time to get some promo in for that.
I got my class coming up. We're going to be doing venison ricotta meatballs with tagliatelle alfredo, so that'll be coming up, I believe it will be the 28th, Tuesday the 28th. Mm-hmm. So be sure to check in for that one. We're going to have a lot of fun, so keep you posted.
That one sounds like a good one, too. And what was it? Your last class went over pretty well also.
Yeah, the last class was super fun. It was the start of a new thing, and I mean, honestly, we had really good feedback. Everyone seems to have fun at the classes. So mm-hmm. It's quick, it's easy, and it's very interactive. So if you haven't done it yet, you should jump on and, you know, check them out. All of the classes seem to be going really well.
Absolutely. And fun fact is that if you are not available to go and participate in a class actively or watch a class, you can go back and purchase the videos on demand. So we have them available. They're the same price as the class. You don't get the interaction, but you can still get the step-by-step instruction and everything like that. And once you purchase it, you have it forever. So you always have access to it. And also, if you sign up for a class and you attend a class, you have access to the on-demand footage so you can go back. But also, if you sign up for a class, are unable to make it, you still have access to those footage. So we always leave that open so that there's an avenue for learning, which is great. So other than that, Ara, what have you been up to?
You know what? We went out deer hunting several weeks ago for our deer opener. We got on deer 2 days, but we had some new hunters with us. Blew some good stocks about mm-hmm. 2 to 3 times. But one of our buddies got a shot off, and he flat out missed on a nice 3x3. But we positioned it right. I mean, it's kind of, when you have new hunters out there, it's a little difficult. But we had a team. We were literally six people, and six people had tags. So we got in great position and moved the deer, this herd, to where we needed him. We got one shot off. It was a miss. And so that wasn't a successful hunt, but it was a great four nights out. We were actually able to film a cooking video while we were out there.
Oh,
too,
nice.
Which is kind of funny.
That's awesome.
Halfway through camp, I was like, hey, we got a full setup. So I was like, let's do a cooking video. So we did a deer camp kind of cooking video. And then I have another hunt. Actually, we're going out locally on Sunday, but just like a day hunt. We have a spot not far from us that there's a bear and deer. So.
Oh, nice.
We'll see how that goes Sunday, a quick day hunt. That's been what's on the realm so far.
Awesome. How long is the bear season there in California? I forget.
It goes through archery and general season. So you have like two and a half months. So August, I want to say August, then it ends November, I believe.
Nice. I was trying to think if I could so my mom lives in Big Bear Lake. I was trying to think if I could make it out. Yeah. So
yeah,
we might have to plan something for next year.
Dude, yeah. I mean, I basically grew up in a Big Bear. Like, we had family, I mean, both sides, my mom's side and dad's side, both had timeshare there, oddly enough. So we were always there, like, every other weekend or every weekend. So I know that place like the back of my hand. And then we snowboard there a lot, too. So.
Yeah.
Always, and it's about an hour and 45 minutes from here.
Perfect. Awesome.
Love me the Big Bear.
Yeah. All right, Colin, what do you got?
All right, a couple things. And by the way, I'm Colin. I got my Nutria meat back and the pelt from the taxidermist, which I'm pretty excited about. I ended up just quartering the Nutria and keeping the front legs and the back legs. Had some odd-looking white stringy things along the meat on the underside, and considering this is a invasive water rat, I didn't really want to test it out this time around. So I just kept the back legs and the front legs, and I made some homemade sauerkraut last week, so I'm thinking I'm going to go with the whole kind of pork and sauerkraut twist with nutrient sauerkraut. It looks a lot like pork, and it
Ooh.
Feels a lot like pork, so I feel like it should
Wow.
probably go well. But
yeah.
I'll let
nice.
You know how it goes. And
awesome.
And the
pelt
turned
it.
Out awesome. What's that, Ara?
I've never had it. I didn't even know people eat that.
Neither have I.
That's awesome. I'm into it.
Talking to Justin, I guess there's a lot of Cajun influenced recipes for him because they're all over
mm-hmm.
the American South, including all the way up in the Chesapeake. I think I forgot to mention that past a couple times I've talked about them. And then this little pocket of Northwest Oregon where I am. So, yeah, I'm interested to see how it turns out.
Wow.
Hopefully, I'm going to slow
That's
cook it
awesome.
For a long time, so anything nasty in there gets burnt out. But, yeah.
Oh, man.
So, Colin, did you say you got that Nutria in Oregon?
I did, yeah, on a local
wow.
farm here. It's a duck hunting farm. Like, they're mostly advertised for duck hunters and goose hunters to go out there. But I called them up, and I've seen Nutria out there before, and I said, hey, do you have any nutrient problems? Can I come out there? And he said, yeah, whenever. If you don't even need to call me about it, just show up.
Oh,
wow.
Man, that's awesome. I thought you were going to say you hunted that in Florida with Justin.
No, it's
that's what I thought.
Right down the road, 10 minutes down the road. And yeah, it's pretty nice. I say it's like Oregon's feral hog almost, because we don't have feral hogs up here, so we gotta find something else.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So I did discover, Colin, as I was perusing the small game manual here in Colorado the other day, that they have a season for marmot.
Yeah.
Gabby
Zaldumbide just posted, she just got a marmot and she made something with it.
Interesting.
From
I didn't see that post.
Yeah.
I'll have to go back and check that out. But yeah, it's, as I read it, a close relative of the woodchuck.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I've only seen marmot out here. We climb Whitney,
and
at the top area, that's all you see. But, like, that's the only place around here we've ever seen them.
Yeah. I
guess
very interesting.
In
Go ahead.
In the fall, they get kind of little chunky. They get a little fat on
them.
They
got stuck up.
So preparing for the winter. So I wonder how that's going to go. We'll see. I'm going to try to find one.
I can't think of Marmot without thinking of the scene from The Big Lebowski where he's in the bathtub and the nihilists come in and throw the marmot in. And he's just like, nice marmot. I can't think of anything else when I hear marmot. So, but I'm glad to know they might be good eating, too.
We'll see. We'll test that theory.
Yeah. Moving on, I did a pheasant hunt with ODFW. It was an ODFW workshop last week, which is pretty awesome. I have an article coming out about it next week. My group was actually the only group that didn't get anything. I think our dog handler is he's pretty bummed out about it. He was a little apologetic. He felt kind of bad. He said he personally stalked 9 birds in that field. But I did see a coyote running around towards the end, and I'm pretty sure he either took some down or scared him off. But I did help another guy clean one of his 2 that he got, and he said, yeah, feel free to take it. He's like, I don't need it. So I do still have a whole pheasant in my freezer right now, which I'm pretty pumped about.
So fully plucked? Great.
It's fully plucked, yeah. They took us all the way through, like, how to clean it and everything. So not plucked, it's skinned. So they taught us this way to, like, whole skin it.
Okay.
And, it was pretty good. I learned a little trick or two for cleaning birds like that size. So it was good.
That's cool.
September goose started this week. I went out with a couple buddies from work. We ended up getting 12 geese over opening weekend. Saved all the meat from it, and then the goose livers, the hearts, and the gizzards. And I borrowed a friend's dehydrator, turned the livers into dog treats, which my dog loves. And I think I'm going to do something similar with hearts, but in a marinade, and make little, like, ring dehydrated goose heart snacks.
Ooh, yeah. Wait, for you or the dog?
Oh, those would be for me. Those would be for me. The livers are for the dog. Yeah. You can have all of them. The hearts are going to be for me. And then we've been talking about gizzards, so I'm going to figure out something to do with gizzards. Hopefully Brad and Ara have some tips for those, too, because they're like a baseball. They're huge.
Yeah.
And I also need to get my own dehydrator. Early controlled deer season is this week, too. I haven't been able to go out yet this week just because of work, but tomorrow night, Saturday and Sunday, I'm pretty much going to be out there looking for any early deer that are coming by. And
nice.
I'm really, really happy with ODFW's R3 movement, not only through the workshops that they're putting on, but they have their own podcast series, and they just had a recent podcast on blacktail hunting, and they had 2 blacktail research scientists on to talk about, like, their habits, where they are, where you can find them. I thought it was pretty cool that they have it on there, and they're really promoting people to get out there and take a deer. So that's this weekend's plan.
Nice.
Yeah.
So blacktail.
Blacktail. Yep.
Awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah, Colin, you get that figured out and give me a call.
Yeah.
I'd love to come down and hunt some blacktail.
That's one of the main points of their podcast is Ghosts of the Pacific, because they're just, I mean, you see all the sign for them. I went scouting for them a couple weeks ago. Saw all the beds, saw all the tracks and everything. I even put out some trail cameras and had a couple does come by on my trail cameras. But once you're out there, they just disappear. So,
wow.
Yeah. Hopefully I'll get lucky. But,
Yeah,
Brad.
Well, good luck.
I'll keep you updated.
Thanks.
Yeah. Perfect segue. Brad, what have you been up to? Welcome back. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks. Glad to be here. So Washington's upland bird season started on the 1st. Usually September 1st is the forest grouse and dove season opener. This year, WDFW decided to shift the season to 2 weeks later, so it actually started yesterday for forest grouse, and now it runs into the middle of January, which is nice. Part of the rationale for that was to, I believe it was to give some of the hens a little bit longer before they get hunted. Basically, you know, try to protect the population just a little bit. So obviously I haven't gotten out for forest grouse yet, but I've been chasing dove quite a bit, and it's just been an odd year. The first weekend I went out, I had a fairly good hunt. There's a little farm tucked back in a deep river canyon that had canola planted on about 20 acres, and it was a really good spot. Me and a buddy got a couple of birds, and I haven't been back yet, but I'm planning to go back this weekend again. I was going to guide a youth pheasant hunt this weekend because this coming up is the youth, a couple of days early pheasant hunt, because the general season doesn't open until, I think, October 23rd this year. But I think we're looking at a half inch of rain coming up Saturday, and those youth that were going to go out are bailing on that, I believe. So I'll have to squeeze in something else, probably chase some grouse, because rain seems to be a good time to run grouse out here. Nice. I have Washington, you get one general deer tag, and they allow a draw for what's called a multi-season tag. So here you usually have to pick a weapon, and that's the one tag you get. You put in for a draw for the multi-season, you still get one deer tag, but you can hunt archery, rifle, and muzzleloader. And I haven't hunted archery in several years, and I've really, you know, got into a focus on upland birds, and so every now and again I take out the muzzleloader or take out the rifle and try to get a deer in the freezer. And wouldn't you know, yesterday morning, I'm teleworking down here in my basement, and my wife has an office and a studio on the first floor, and she texts me, she says, "Get up here, you're going to want to see these mule deer." So I come upstairs, and there's this really, really nice mule deer buck just hanging out right outside. You know, I've got a kiddie pool to keep full of water, and this dude came in with one of the doe and fawn regulars on a little fork horn, and I'm like, holy smokes. You know, and it's like, well, if I'd have been shooting my bow.
Yeah, right?
So that was kind of cool. Yeah, man, he was gorgeous, you know, and one of those deer, the mule deer are so susceptible to gun seasons out here. I hope that guy makes it, because, you know, to see a nice 3-point like that is kind of rare, because 3-point's the minimum. So four corns are running around all over the place, you know, but seeing a buck like that was pretty sweet.
And then that next year they get taken out first round. So, like, done.
Yeah, man, as soon as they get that 3-point. You know, funny story, sorry to segue again, but when I first bought this property, it was like 2016, and that fall I had a 3x4 mule deer on the property that was, it couldn't have been a year old buck. You know, it was a young buck, and he would sleep in the yard, and I would be out there shooting my bow, and I would toss him carrots and stuff. He was a buddy of mine. He was really cool. He had these stickers and just this crazy little rack on him, and I ran a guy out of my yard literally trying to kill that deer with a bow in September.
Oh, wow.
So it gets pretty competitive out here.
I can imagine.
Yeah. But other than trying to put some birds in the freezer and getting the dogs out running, I've got a buddy from Oregon who's coming up next week for the senior hunt. He's going to come up the 23rd and 24th, and we're going to chase pheasants for the senior week there. And then the muzzleloader season opens on next Saturday on the 25th, so I'm probably going to take the muzzleloader for a walk. There's a new piece of property on the Snake River that opened up to the public this year, and I've been licking my chops looking at that thing, you know, for chucker and for mule deer for years, and spotted it on Onyx this year. I was like, whoa, there's another several hundred acres we're going to go check out, you know, right up to the river breaks. So that'll be sweet.
And, now, do you guys get much, do you get any whitetail up that way?
Yeah, so where I'm out in the middle of wheat country, so I'm kind of far back off of the river, but we get a lot of mixed whitetail and mule deer here.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the heavy cover draw bottoms are full of whitetails, and there are some astounding whitetail bucks out here. I was shocked when I first moved here about a decade ago. You know, a buck that I thought was big in Virginia was one of these average little 4x4s in Washington, and, you know, partially because the bucks have really dense cover that they get smart and they hang out in, and the seasons are short because there are a lot of hunters in Washington. And so it's just, you know, what I call a good buck now is truly a good buck, because you see dime a dozen 3x3, 4x4, and when you start getting into those whitetails that are 24 inches wide and 5-point racks, you know, 5x5s and just really heavy big bucks, and it's pretty amazing.
I just started into whitetail, actually. I'm headed up to Indiana next month to go whitetail for my second time. beginning of October. I think it's October 5th we're headed out there. So I'm just new to this whitetail game. It's a little different than the muleys we have out here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Definitely is.
But man, I love whitetail. I always have. Yeah. Like I grew up, I grew up hunting whitetail. We had mule deer in some parts of Oklahoma, but not where I was at. And man, I think the meat's phenomenal. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love mule deer meat as well, but whitetail meat's just, I love it.
Yeah. I've had it a handful of times.
Yeah.
It's just different. It's a different hunt. It's so different.
Well, it is. And coming from Virginia, when I hunted most of my whitetail in the mountains with, oak and other hardwoods,
mm-hmm.
from eating a lot of the acorns, they had a lot of tannins in the meat, and so there was a distinct whitetail flavor back in Appalachia. But out here, 99% of the deer that I hunt are, around the farmland, so they are mm-hmm. they're grazed on a lot of wheat and canola and other grains. And I think some of the deer that I've taken out here are probably the best table fare that you can get for venison.
Yeah. The diet plays so much, and I love it. Colin, are our tags, is it mule deer? We have one mule deer and whitetail, right?
I got to double check. I think it's for any deer, but it's going to be mule deer where we are. I don't think we're going to be.
Well, unless
we go out to the plains, then we might see whitetail.
Well, we will be up. That zone's up in the northeast part of the state. So that's like butting up to Kansas and Nebraska. Like that's the eastern plains. So yeah, those river bottoms and watersheds hold those whitetails pretty tight.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure it's for any deer. It doesn't specify mule deer or whitetail.
It's good to know. And then we have a late season whitetail late season whitetail season here as well. That's more like, I think, the southeast part of the state on the plains. But should be interesting.
Yeah,
but, I don't know. People, so when I'm up in Wyoming, like, people complain, everybody complains about the whitetail mule deer mix off and on, but people, it was funny because we were up hunting mule deer. And they're like, what are you going to do with that mule deer? I was like, I'm going to eat it. They're like, why? Like, why don't you get you one of those whitetails? I was like, well, I got a mule deer tag, so I'm going to take this mule deer. They're like, oh, tastes like sage. And I was like, whatever.
Hey, that's a good thing,
that's why
though.
You pair it with sage.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah. Less seasoning.
Right. Natural flavor.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
All right, well, so let's move in. So, those are listening, we're going to, the focus of this kind of podcast episode is that we're right in the midst of dove season for the majority of the United States, so I thought it was a great time to talk a little bit about dove. If you recall, recently we had a great waterfowl episode where we talked about cooking duck and geese and all those fun things. And so this time we're going to give a love to the gray-feathered mini-missiles known as dove. I do have a game we want to play, and I'm trying to think. I'll give you guys the opportunity. Does anybody want to be the judge? Does anybody want out?
Yeah, I'll
judge. All right. Brad's the judge,
oh,
then.
Man.
Colin, you have to play.
All right.
You were talking smack earlier about our about waterfowl game. So this is... All right. So what we're going to do in this game, so the winner of this game is going to get a Flying Pheasant shirt. So those are over on the Harvesting Nature website. It's a great little graphic that I did of basically like a flushing pheasant. But it's cool. Colin, I think you recently snagged one. I don't know.
So I'm ready. Right. I'm ready now.
You ready?
Yeah,
you're ready. So
I'm ready. I'm ready. I'm ready to get one.
You can either keep the shirt or you can give it away to someone. It doesn't have to be someone on the show, and you don't have to tell me now. So you can just text me or email me later.
Perfect.
So this sound, I'll play it first so that you can hear it.
What's the premise of the game?
Yeah, all right,
so the premise of the game is we're gonna do an elimination, and we're gonna pair off, and we're gonna do a dove sound, right? And then Brad's gonna judge the winner out of the two, and then we'll go to the final round, and then whoever has the best dove coo will go on to win.
Oh, we have to do the dove coo?
Like we have to? You have to do it.
All right.
You have to do it.
But
we have to do it. But I have a point of reference.
Okay, so am I judging who gets it right first?
Yeah. So we're gonna go. All right, so here's the way it'll work. So let's go. I'll go against Colin first.
Okay.
And then I'll give you the bye. And so the winner out of this mine and Colin's round will go on to compete against you, and then the winner out of that will take it.
Sick.
Okay. So what I'll do is I'll play the coup now before the round. We can each make the sound. I'll play the coup again, and then Brad can tell us which one he thinks is the closest.
All right.
All right. You ready, Colin?
Yeah, I was practicing with my mic off.
Oh. All right. So let me make sure my phone's up here. I'm going to play the sound. All right. Did you hear it?
Yeah.
You want to go first or second?
I want to go second.
Okay.
Dang.
All right. I'll do it.
All right. Not bad.
Ooh. All right. All right, I'll play it again, and then we'll get the final word. What do you think, Brad?
I'm gonna have to go with Colin.
Ah. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
can't wait to listen to this episode.
Yes.
All right. So I'll play it again since this is a new round now. So now we got Aura versus Colin here. All right. Listen close. Got it? All right. So, Colin, since you won the last round, you get to go first.
All right.
All right, Aura.
That's pretty good.
Oh! All right, I'll play. I don't know. It's a hard one. Let me play it again here. All right, Brad, what do you think?
Yeah, or I think he took
it,
man.
Definitely.
Oh! Nice. I don't know.
I got a pheasant shirt.
Yeah, sorry, we don't have a dove shirt.
Next one coming up.
Next one, the gray-feathered mini-missiles shirt.
Yeah. I like it.
So I think it's pretty cool. I don't know. I've never heard of anybody using dove calls, like, in hunting. Have you guys ever?
No, I haven't.
You have? Brad, you have?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Not I.
Not you.
I'm just new to the decoy scene even. But, yeah, folks, some folks swear by morning dove calls, and I've got a buddy who's good at making hand coos, and he tries them on collared doves when we hunt them, and it seems to work.
Now, is there any variation in between the calls of the difference between, like, morning doves or collared dove, or, like, what are the Eurasian doves?
Yeah, the Eurasian dove has a little bit different call than the morning dove. It's kind of the same number of syllables, but it's not as melodic as the morning dove. It's more raspy and more like, what the hell was that?
That's fair. Well, that's good to know. I've never personally used calls, like I mentioned, but I don't know. Maybe it's a theory to test out. Obviously, I won't be doing it with my mouth. I'll probably do it with a call because I lost this contest. But are you gonna try it next time, Ara, when you're out?
I don't know. Maybe I never even thought about calling him in, but since I'm the winner now, I know that if it's the three of us, I might have the best call. So the chances are.
If we all go hunting, you're calling the dove.
Yeah, I'm calling the dove in.
Here,
I speak with them.
I pulled up a collared dove song, if you guys want to hear it, see if it works.
Yeah, let's hear it.
Yeah. Does that sound about right?
Interesting.
Yeah. Justin, you should be hearing that down where you're at.
Yeah, I've seen them. I've seen a ton of them out.
That's from everywhere. Audubon, so they're a pretty reputable source for birds. You know what? I've heard that call in my backyard, but I thought it was an owl. And now I'm wondering if it was a collared dove. I've seen collared doves here, and I mean, I know there are owls back there. There's definitely barred owls back there, but yeah, interesting. Might be
cool.
One instead.
Well, it's good to know too. I didn't really know until I started looking to the sounds for this game that there was a little bit of a difference, and I was like, oh, wow, I don't know how. All right, we'll figure this out. Maybe I find myself closer to the collared dove than the morning dove in my calling.
It's a little easier.
A little more raspy. less melodic.
Less melodic.
But so I started off our waterfowl episode with a couple little facts, which this is more specific to morning doves, but they're one of the most abundant and widely distributed birds in North America, and their fall population was recently estimated to be 350 million, which is a lot. And the reason call them gray-feathered mini-missiles is their speed can reach up to 55 miles an hour, which is pretty incredible. And they primarily eat seeds, and they consume 12 to 20% of their body weight daily, which is insane.
Wow.
Yeah. And they can survive for decades. One of the oldest ones was a male banded in Georgia. It was banded in Georgia in 1968 and shot in Florida in 1998 at the age of 30 years and 4 months.
How do you think that bird tasted?
That's impressive.
A 30-year-old bird.
Boot leather.
A little tough.
That bird's seen things.
He's flying a little slower than the rest. That's why he got taken down.
Yeah, seriously.
When was, I'm trying to think when the Cuban Missile Crisis was. Was that 62? No. I don't know. Either way.
Somewhere in the early 60s before JFK died.
Yeah, he almost... could have seen the end of the Vietnam War and the beginning
62,
of the Internet.
Yeah, exactly. 62.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
All right.
Damn.
Well, with those fun facts out of the way, because I think those are cool. I always like those little tidbits. But, Brad, you recently penned an article titled Morning Smoke. Not morning is the time of day, but morning is in the doves. You want to tell us about your article and a little bit about your adventure there?
Yeah, that was a pretty good time. That was last fall, last September, and the whole thing came about as an accident You know, I had planned to go hunt sage grouse in Oregon, and the wildfire smoke had rolled into the eastern side of Oregon and Washington the day that I was going to leave, and it was just so acrid. There was no way I was going to, you know, subject myself or my dogs to that. So I just bailed on the sage grouse hunt, and it was a short one because Oregon season was really short. So I was teleworking, too, because it was, you know, COVID issues. So with that smoke and being locked in the house, I went upstairs for lunch one day, or I think that's how the deal went. But anyhow, I noticed there was a bunch of birds flying. And it was really unique. And so I would endure it for about 30 minutes at a time and sneak out behind the barn, and doves were circling in, and I would get four or five and run back in the house and, you know, either go back to work or hang out for until the afternoon and come back out for another 30 minutes. And, I mean, it was utter chaos. Like, the bird, there were so many dove, and they were all just hanging around, and you would shoot one or two, and they would all circle around and come back in. You would shoot one or two, you know. And of course, there was plenty of missing going on because I shoot about 20% on doves. But it was, man, it was just, you know, it's something like it spurred me to actually look into what science is out there on smoke effects on migratory birds and whatnot. And so I led to some of that in the article that you guys published. But really it was super interesting. And this year is a whole different ball game. Like, I haven't gotten a bird really on the homestead yet. And there's so few. And I we had like 35 degrees this morning, and I went out and I was like, finally, they're going to start flying. And I didn't see a bird at all today. So I don't know, man, the doves pulled the whole 180, but that wildfire thing was a real deal.
Huh. Because we're dealing with the smoke. I mean, last year they said it was worse here in Colorado than this year, but it's still like, it's pretty smoky. I wonder what effect. And then I was talking with Emily tonight, and she's been like four or five times over out. They live in Oklahoma, and she's only shot like four or five birds. So, kind of a slow season. I see people getting them, but I don't see people going crazy with them.
Mm-mm.
Yeah,
I'm picking up one or two a trip.
I wonder. I'm not familiar with the migratory patterns of dove, so. I wonder the effects of like the wildfires on them last year, being they were so widespread.
Yeah, I'm curious. I know I've been keeping track of the annual U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service population trend papers. Last year, unbelievably, 2020 had 400 million birds approximately coming into the season. And so that was one of the highest overall annual population estimates I've read in a while. And the harvest was great, too. And there were so many more actual hunter days with 2020. And I assume some of that had to do with, you know, COVID. And
I was about to say more people afield.
Yeah. And so I know the Western population is estimated to be in decline. But I'm really curious now, you know, seeing what I'm seeing this year, what the annual report's going to look like next year on how many birds were harvested in the Western U.S. And you know, it's always interesting to check the trends.
Yeah, and it's true. And then to kind of do a hot wash and see, like, hey, how may that affected my season, and how may it affect next year too, to give any estimates and predictions. But yeah, awesome. And then I mean, I love dove hunting because it's one of those things that's very straightforward. Like, growing up as a kid, that was one of the first things we did. It was the first hunting season to open. It was generally like, still while football was going on, so like we'd go to football practice, wrap up football practice, and then like usually we were out in somebody's pasture like hunting dove. But and it, you know, usually comprised of like sitting on the back of the tailgate on one of the crop pastures, like just waiting. So
yeah. That sounds awesome.
Yeah, it was so much fun. And then of course everybody, the things to do with dove were not as expensive as they are today. Which, I don't know, maybe that has led to my aversion to poppers, but...
Yeah.
Corey was sure to mention that on this list of things to talk about today, so we'll address that when it comes. But where typically are each of you dove hunting? Like, what's the environment looking like? What's a typical dove hunt sort of looking like for you? And I'll let you take the lead there, Ara.
So where we go near these orchards, and there's just a variety of, in this one span of area, it's, I mean, there's everything from pomegranates to grapefruits to almonds, and they're just all around there. And it's about, we usually go, it's about like an hour and a half from our house, so we can just go for the night and come back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of like in these orchards where there's these kind of these tree paths that they have, and we kind of hide into the trees. And I remember the first few times I went dove hunting, and I was like, I always know, like, there's a shit ton of people out there. Everybody's like, you're standing 20 yards from each other. It's like everyone's just going to get peppered and shot. That's kind of like what it's like. So I was like, yep. I'm not going out unless I'm wearing, you know, orange and everybody can see me. And then I remember, like, it was like the third time I was out there, this guy was like, the dove can see you. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, the dove can see you because you're standing there with a bunch of orange on. And I was like, yeah, but I don't want to get shot. He's like, well, go where there's nobody else, and then you have to wear camo, you know,
mm-hmm.
and you have to, like, get into the tree. And I was like, okay. And then, I mean, ever since then, my success rate has substantially gone up. And now, like, when I take people and I'm like, hey, look, you're standing there clear as day. They can see you. That's why you know, they're coming in and they're flying over. They're like, here they come. They're like, these things are, it's like Top Gun out there. It's like evasive maneuvers. They're like, they'll bank left and right. And they see you coming, or they're coming in and they can see you from so far. You don't even have a shot. So now we're in there. We kind of like tuck into the trees. And when they fly over, we kind of stand in this pattern where we're like across from each other, but like 40 to 60 yards, and then we can kind of see over the other one's head, so we can call in the shots. And, like, as long as you know where your other friends are, it's all good. Just don't follow through down low. And that's kind of like we coach everybody that's never been with us. It's like, we will be close to each other. Just look, if it's coming down, there'd be another bird. Just don't follow through all the way down, because they will.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're smart enough to know. They're like, look at these idiots down here. Let's just make them shoot each other. it's pretty crazy. But I mean, that's I know a lot of people that go around to a bunch of other areas which are more populated. Like around here, in the LA area, there is a big group of dove hunters that want to get out, because it's like the itching. It's the first time you can shoot guns, you know what I mean,
mm-hmm.
really at like anything. They're like, we're going to go. So like all the areas which are awesome are pretty heavily populated. So it's just we've been out to the Salton Sea before, which is like, it's like a 3-hour trek into like the desert. And there are a lot of dove. But, I mean, we went once. We all limited out in, like, the first, I want to say, hour of sunrise. But it was, like, I needed to wear safety glasses and, like, a sombrero, because you're just getting peppered the entire time.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's I was like, this was fun and all, but, like, the sun came up. It was 115, and I was like, we got to go. We're not coming back here. it was pretty gnarly.
You gotta judge that point if the juice is worth the squeeze, you know.
Exactly. Personally, exactly. I mean,
I'd love to see you out there hunting in a sombrero.
just not blaze orange.
Yeah,
no.
Not a blaze orange sombrero. But, yeah.
I wonder if I'm gonna hit up First Light and see if they'll make me a camo sombrero.
There's gotta be a camo sombrero. Yeah. I'm gonna look it up right now.
Brad, how about you? What's your typical dove hunt?
Well, so I have two, and one at the house here is
mm-hmm.
I'm surrounded by wheat, and I've got a postage stamp of mature trees and black locust, and some of them are dead and bony, and so the doves have great perches right along the edge of wheat fields. And so I have a couple of spots here on the property that I can just sneak in under the trees, or, you know, sit in the weeds or something, and doves move in and out pretty regular. So I can even pinpoint, like, the trees that they like to perch before they swoop in to feed and whatnot. So on the home front, it's pretty simple. You know, just use the trees and the cover to get close to how they're going to move into the food source.
Nice.
Another spot that I go that I think I mentioned earlier, it's a small farm that's in a deep, narrow river canyon, and it's half of the half of this field is either wheat or canola. It's only about 20 acres,
mm-hmm.
is surrounded by creeks or rivers and tree lines. And then the upland side of it is basically just short bunch grass like Hungarian partridge country. And so it's really interesting how the doves interact in there, and there's a power line that runs along, it parallels one of the tree lines on it. So that place, I like to get back in under the trees near that power line because the doves will come and they'll fly along the power line and they'll perch on and then they'll swoop in. And so it kind of creates a natural kind of a flyway along that field. So I like to sit in there, but I find out here that the doves fly far better in the morning than they do in the evening. So I usually don't do a lot of evening hunts unless I'm here at the house or something like that. But I'm tempted to try one tomorrow because the weather's been so good. I might run out there tomorrow and see what it's looking like.
Oh, nice. You'll have to report back to us on how that went.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. Colin, what about you?
You know, I haven't gone dove hunting up here. I've seen them flying around all the time, but I haven't gone out there. There isn't a whole lot of, like, field opportunities. We don't have a lot of grain around here. It's mostly cattle.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to get, like, the canola fields or the millet fields and stuff like that. But, yeah, I don't know. Doves, if I was out hunting for something else and it was still dove season and they came by, then I would surely take a shot. But, yeah. And collared dove are all year round here, I'm pretty sure. So
yeah,
they're invasive
here too.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yep.
We so I haven't been out here. So Colorado has some great access plans with a lot of the farmers around here, where you can go on, you can hunt either. It's designated by the signage, and they posted. They have a whole like atlas. It's like a public access atlas. But they work with the farmers, and you can go out, and as long as they're not actively farming, like in the equipment sitting on the field, you can go out and hunt either, you know, what's posted, if it's big game only, or big game, small game, or upland. So a lot of the fields just east of Denver are open to, at the minimum, upland game. And so the dove, I was out there 4 weeks ago, driving around looking for antelope. And dove, and they're a dove all over. So I'm not sure what they're growing out there. It seemed like a mixture of stuff. Some of it was cut, some of it was not, but should be pretty interesting to still get out there. And I think there's still a couple weeks left in the season, maybe. It may go until November. I'll have to double check. But I plan on taking my daughter out just because I think that's a fun hunt to just for her to go along with and just kind of enjoy. And if she gets tired, I don't feel bad about, like, turning around and coming home immediately. So, growing up, we would hunt, like I said earlier, we hunted a lot of evenings, which generally doves are kind of predictable in their patterns, like moving from their roost to food or roost to water or water to roost in the evening, kind of that same pattern. So that was generally where we would try to set up is near water or their roost, depending on the time of day. That's pretty much it. Like, dove hunting's just always been a fun thought for me. Like, I've never been like, you know, we may have not shot many birds, but I always had a really good time because it's very, like, casual and, yeah, just fun. So, and I always feel at the end of dove hunting how much I need to go shoot clay trap just to, like, brush up on my shooting.
Every time.
No way.
Every time.
There's no comparison in the two, man. You can shoot all the clays you want.
So that reminds me, what do you go out with when you're thinking about shot-to-kill ratio? What do you walk out in the field with when you're looking at ammunition? How many boxes of shells?
And what size?
Oh, when, man. When I go out, like, we gotta have 3 to 4 boxes per person. So, and
okay,
that's just kind of what we have on hand. And it's just a general rule. Usually, we'll go through like 1 to 2 boxes a person. But
okay.
And that's kind of in general. It really depends on who's shooting and who's with us, but we will, when we go out, we ship out, everybody's got to have a minimum at least, like, 3. Just, like, either at the car or accessible. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, because we're not usually far from our car. So we only hoof it back and reload, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting. I would say for me, if I go through a half a box, it's been a good day.
Oh wow!
See, yeah, it's I don't remember. I think the last time I actually shot a full box of shells on a dove hunt was in Appalachia. Like I don't.
Wow.
Even when the hunting is good here, I still don't see that many birds.
Wow.
And for, you know, it really cracks me up. And I hear Ara mention limit out on doves, and for me, it's like limiting out is when I've shot 25 shells. Exactly.
Fair.
Yeah. So, but I mean, I don't know what you guys hunt with for shotgun. I stick to a side by side for almost everything. But I've got an old Ithaca Model 37 pump 12 gauge. That's a real dynamite dove gun too.
Nice. No, I had a Remington 870 forever, and then a bunch of the guys I was hunting with, everybody had semis, and I was like, I couldn't get enough rounds off. So I finally, it's like 3 years back, I got a Beretta, the A400, and that thing is like a Cadillac. It shoots amazing. And then, I mean, once you have a semi, dove hunting then becomes a little bit more fun. Because when you're pumping, or you have a side-by-side or under, you have two shots. But when you can at least throw three at them,
yeah.
I mean, these things are just freaking crazy, man.
Yeah, it's more fun when you're getting stuff, you know, like it's
exactly, you know. Exactly. I mean, you see them flying by, and our shot window isn't very large, so like we're sending them off. You know what I mean? It's just like you see them coming, and you're like bah, 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 and they'll like they're flying in. They're always it's like watching the Blue Angels out there. They're coming in twos and threes. It's pretty crazy.
I've had it forever. I think it was actually like one of the first guns I ever bought, but I have a Maverick. It's a Maverick by Mossberg. It's like equivalent to like, I think the Mossberg 55, which is the pump. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I've had it forever since I was probably 18.
I bought my 870 when I was 18.
Yeah.
I just upgraded my shotgun repertoire, I guess you could call it. So my local gun store down here, he posted that he had a Remington Spartan 453, which is a Russian-made shotgun by Baikal Arms, and it's a Russian-made shotgun that Remington just takes and stamps their name on it. But it's a 12 gauge semi-auto. It's all camoed out. Fits 2 3/4 up to 3.5-inch shells. And when I was out goose hunting, man, that thing was a dream. Like you were saying, Arda, it's like driving a Cadillac compared to my Mossberg 500.
Once you get in there, man, it's crazy. Once you get those high-end guns, you're like, whoa, what was I missing out on? This is insane.
And it wasn't that expensive either. You're like, it was a pretty good deal that I got it for. I think it was right about like a little bit below the retail price and everything. Wasn't really that heavily used. And my local Coast Guard exchange had a whole bunch of boxes of 3.5-inch BB, so it was like everything.
I was going to ask you if you got the 3.5-inch.
Oh yeah.
I got guns. When you come out here, I have some 3.5-inch turkey load that you can have because I bought them thinking I could put 3.5 in mine, and I couldn't.
Okay.
But I got them.
Wow.
I got them at the price. The guy was selling them. We were in Central Florida. It was when I was turkey hunting with Craig, and we popped into like this little bitty like hunting store to try to get some like intel on some turkeys. The guy was not helpful, but I always, if I'm gonna ask questions, I always like buy stuff because I'm like, I want to support the local businesses too, but you also pay a little bit for your intel. And so he had the boxes were like $12-13. He's like, yeah, these are priced before the ammo went up. So I was like, give me three boxes, like whatever, I'll take them. I'll either give them to somebody or I'll figure out a way to use them.
They're
yours when you get here. But, right. So let's change gears a little bit. We've been talking about the actual, like, hunting part of it. And as you guys know, this is a Wild Fishing Game podcast, so we obviously got to talk about the cooking and eating part of it, which I think is equally important. So, first question, out of the gate, do you pluck or do you breast the doves?
Pluck. I gotta pluck it. I'm like a lot of people that I used to hunt with. They all breasted. They're just like, yeah, what are you gonna do with it? for me, I'm the type of person, like, if I killed it, I kind of want every part of it. I want to enjoy every part of it. I think already with breasting it, you're losing. The dove don't have that much meat on them anyways. So I want to do something and make recipes where I can, like, eat all of it. I do really enjoy. I'm one of those people that will eat the bones if I can. So, like, with the legs, if you crisp them up nice, I'll eat those bones. You know what I mean?
Really?
It's like quail. If you get them, yeah, I will. Like, obviously, with the breastplate, you can't.
Yeah.
I have a recipe
but the legs are fine.
Yeah.
Well, like, we're not just going to reset this. We've got to dive into this.
So, like, with dove bone, okay, dove, the legs are very, very thin bones, and they're small. So when you cook it, those bones are, like, crunchy, and you can actually eat them. I also, just to be honest, I eat sunflower seeds, so, like, and it doesn't bother me. Like, I don't have the patience.
Like, with the shell?
Sunflowers. With the shell, yeah.
Okay.
But, wait, to come back to it, a lot of people that I tell to do it, once you know you can do it, you can chew through it. Your body will break it down. It's not you can chew through the bones, and it's not going to get stuck inside of you. It's like eating chips. When you get to, like, the other parts of it, I'm just talking about, like, the legs on the ends. Depends on also how you cook it too. The last recipe I just did, it's going to come up next month. I'm editing the video, so I didn't put it all together, but I did kind of chicken fried dove. But what I did was instead of just double frying it or double battering it, I like, in my mind, corn nuts are pretty much the crunchiest thing you can put into your mouth. And I was like, what if I just grind up corn nuts and use that as the second dredging instead of using panko? And it came out fantastic. So flour, blended corn nuts.
Wow.
Dredge it, and then on top of it, like, now I'm crunching through, and it's just this crunchy, great experience. Recipe coming soon to Harvesting Nature. What's up?
I'm excited. I want to read this.
So has the bone eating experience carried over into any other birds that you've hunted, or is it strictly for doves?
So dove and quail, I do it. Dove and quail, I'll do it. I had a friend in junior high that his mom used to eat, like, the chicken bone, and I tried that, and I just couldn't. Like, it's just, there's too much in there. But I do, like, with any bird, I do like the cartilage. So, like, I'm, like, that person from, like, the top of the chicken, like, I'll eat the cartilage. You know, the eagle's beak that's inside the breastplate on the chicken, I'll eat that cartilage. Like, that's me. So that crunchy experience comes with, it depends on the bird. So far for me, it's quail and dove that I'll do that. Like, I'll eat the leg bones.
Huh. Okay. I'm very intrigued. I'm going to have to try this.
Yeah.
Thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying, like, throw the whole bird in your mouth.
Right? No.
But, like, if you tear off that leg, like, of a quail or a dove, I mean, it's like this little chicken leg, and then, I mean, you can eat it.
What bird is it they eat, people eat whole? Is it the sparrows? Is that what the one?
I think
European cuisine.
They'll eat the whole thing with the head and everything.
Yeah.
It's like out of the egg, right? Like a partially developed egg?
No, you're thinking balut.
Balut.
Which is like
a straight,
partially developed fermented chicken or duck egg.
Yeah.
That's a whole other conversation we could talk about.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
I did that one once, by the way. Just once. Just once I did the balut. But the sparrow they'll eat, I'm pretty sure it's a sparrow. It's like those small, cheap birds.
Yep.
And, like, they'll eat them whole with the head and everything.
So I think we're all consensus here about plucking. So growing up, like, we definitely just took the breast out, but I've since then, even if I just get a couple, I'm just going to put the effort in and pluck them.
They really, I mean, they pluck really easy as far as game birds
It's like zero effort.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, you can even, like, crisp the skin on them if you're a good chef. I haven't quite mastered that myself, but there are ways to do that, you know, like with a broiler on the grill.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So I did it. Yeah. We'll dance around recipes as we're doing this, too. My sous vide Peking dove, that recipe basically is like I sous vide the dove and then just seared them. And then seared them on the grill so they were, like, nice and crispy. And actually, you know, I look at the pictures now, Ara, and I see exactly what you're talking about because I see the legs on both the little doves there. And I was like, you could totally just crunch that. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it's one of those things, like, unless somebody kind of tells you, like, just eat it, or you're just lazy like me, I just want to eat the whole. I'm tired of it.
This is like this is like when I learned that people eat the entire kiwi, like whole.
Okay. Yeah.
Like that blew my mind.
Like the hairy skin and everything.
Yeah, they just bite into it like an apple.
People are savages.
And it works and it's good. My buddy in junior high did that. I looked at him like he was an alien. I was like, he's like, no, dude, you do it. And I was like, okay. And then from then on, like to this day, I'll just eat the kiwi, the whole thing. It
like
actually, it doesn't, zero bitter flavor. It's like, it's great.
I like to buy kiwis when I know people are going to come over and visit and then just like purposely like walk over and grab one and just eat it like nonchalantly just to see the reactions.
People lose their mind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're like, wait, what did you just do? What are you talking about? All right. Well, let's go back to this Peking dove recipe. So it's a play on Peking duck, obviously, which is a very traditional preparation. And actually, if you listen to our episode on waterfowl and you listen to the facts section, you will learn that Peking duck is the number one way that duck is consumed in the United States. We did contest that stat a little bit because I don't think the USDA takes into account the consumption of wild duck in that figure, but I would assume that they're probably basing it off of the type of duck that is used for Peking duck, which is very specific. I used that recipe as a basis for the Peking dove, which super easy to do. You do it in the sous vide, and essentially you're just going to make a nice little sauce and put your dove in there and let it cook at 140 degrees for like an hour, and it brings it up to temp enough, and then you bring your grill up to heat and cook until your internal temp is like 160. So you get a nice little flavor, and you can use the grill to really crisp it up. And I did pickled vegetables and just plain white rice with it, and then I used a little bit of the sauce because it's cooked well, and just drizzled it on there also. Man, and it was delicious. I was really, really happy.
I think sous vide and then finishing on the grill is probably my favorite way to do game birds. At least dove, quail, you know, the small game birds. It's just awesome.
Because you don't really have much chance to overcook them, and that's where everybody falls short.
Yep.
Everybody falls short.
They don't get tough. They don't get dry.
Mm-mm.
It's just right.
And I think the key is when you do the sous vide, though, you have to, like, you can't set it at that 165 or that 160. Like, you have to short it a little bit so that once you do it on the grill, it'll bring it to that temp that you want.
Yeah.
But, man, that's so good. I'm going to have to make it again. Actually, Colin, didn't I bring that one in to work?
Yes, you made that with the pickled vegetables.
Yep.
That was delicious.
It's not that I did.
Yep.
Yeah, it was good. We were there at work eating dove just with our hands, like fried chicken legs.
Yeah. Yes.
Let's see. So, all right, we got one of yours. This is from way back in the Harvest of Nature archive, going back
the
to doves and dove poppers.
Yeah. Dude, that was old school. Old school.
So
man,
you want to talk a little bit? Yeah, you want to talk a little bit about those? You can recollect.
Yeah. I mean, dove poppers. You can't really go wrong. I mean, this kind of goes against the cooking of the whole thing, but I mean, it. when you serve this, this is the intro to game. When people don't eat anything game, you give them a Dove Popper and you go eat this, and they're like, this is fantastic. You know what I mean? You give them a good dipping sauce. I did the tomato chutney with that. It mm-hmm. pairs really mm-hmm. well. And look, jalapeno cream cheese bacon, you can really kind of put anything in that thing.
That's right.
And it's
yeah.
going to be awesome. And that's a lot of the time, I mean, people come over to my house and I cook game for them, and they're like, I don't know. And you're like, dude, just eat this. So now a lot of people don't even ask. And this is kind of like, that's a good recipe for people who don't really know. I'll say that. You know what I mean? People that haven't tried it, people that don't know much about Dove, it's easy, simple, great appetizer, cream cheese, jalapeno, a Dove breast right on top, wrap it in bacon, dip it in that tomato chutney, and you got magic in your mouth.
It's good. And, you know, I appreciate – here's one thing. My caveat to Dove Poppers is I appreciate the creativity, and it's like things to dress them up and go beyond, like, the cheese, the Dove, and, the bacon. Like, I don't know. I just why I have such a disdain for them is because I think that there's so much out there that we could do differently to utilize, like, the whole bird. And, you know, maybe it's an inward reflection of myself to be like, growing up, we ate Dove Poppers and, you know, pork poppers and all kinds
yeah.
of stuff. But at the end of the day, now that I've grown in my culinary abilities, like, I want to do different, and I don't know. I'm not going to hate
yeah.
on people for eating Dove Poppers, but I want people to do more with them, to, like, to explore. But you know what? If Dove Poppers make you happy, just eat Dove Popper.
The Dove Popper, it's like the foot in the door. You know what I mean? It's
yeah.
like somebody's like, yeah. oh, okay. Like, I'll do – and you know what? It's better. Like, I've been dove hunting with people, and they're like, oh, we don't want the birds. I'm like, why are you out here then? And then, like,
yeah.
they just give me the birds. I'm like, I'll take them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, at least go make a popper.
Yeah,
yep.
yeah, I mean, that's
you
easy
know what I mean?
Enough.
It's like, you have food. It's you're hunting for food here.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, on the other side of the popper scale, but still utilizing the same thing, I'll bring this up, is Ryan, Emily, and myself back last year, we did the infamous three-ingredient Dove Wellington. And that was like, to me, I think that is the future Trump of the Dove Popper, because you're literally taking, like, puff pastries and you're wrapping it around a, like, mustard-coated Dove breast and cooking it on either the smoker or the oven to make this, like, little mini Wellington.
Boom.
And
that's a Dove Popper 2.0.
Nice.
Yeah, right? The possibilities that are endless. Because you could put spinach inside, you could add cheese, you could do whatever, but it's like this little hot pocket of Dove meat. And
yes.
that, I think, there's, I don't know many people that are going to turn that down.
Like, you heard it here first. Invest now.
Yeah, right. Coming to the frozen food section near you.
Coming to Costco near you. The Dove Wellington.
I mean, that's a perfect sample to have out on a Sunday, right?
Right?
Boom.
Yeah.
For parties, for whatever, football games. That's it.
You could actually do that, though, if you had, like, a large enough pigeon operation.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right?
Ooh. Definitely.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting.
That's, but the thing is, you know what, if you, I don't know if anybody's going to eat pigeon at Costco.
You,
yeah, you never know.
Hey, this one was called in the parking lot.
Yeah. Look, all you got to do, you just got to switch the O and the E, and it just looks fancier, and then
that's
people
it.
Are like, oh, yeah, it's French pigeon, it's okay.
You just
yeah.
tell them, it's not pigeon, it's pigeon.
you got to rebrand it a little bit, you know, something,
yeah.
find a more pleasing name for it instead of just pigeon.
So the pigeon is the Chilean sea bass of the upland game world.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Got to change the narrative on it.
Nice. All
right, well, let's, I don't know, what do you guys have favorites? What's your favorite way to prepare Dove? We've talked a couple recipes. Ours, well, you mentioned a popper, but I don't know if that's your exact favorite.
No, not even. That's not even close to my favorite. Honestly, I like every time I get dove, I try and then not just me. I think of a new way to make them. And every time, I mean, sometimes they're not as good as others. Mm-hmm. Last year, I skewered them up kind of like kebab style, and seasoned them the similar to like how we would do like kebabs. And they came out great. I put them on the open flame, like on a manga, like through skewers, open coals. Came out great. Probably not the best way. It got a little bit dry too quick. I like it braised over some red cabbage, you know?
Ooh.
Yeah, that way it always works out. It's a little more Eastern European. Mm-hmm. There's so many different ideas that I have. I don't think I can land on just one.
That's fair.
Did you say crispy one? Yeah, go ahead.
Did you say ground in the cabbage?
No, braised.
Braised okay.
in red cabbage. Okay. This last one that I did was phenomenal, and I made a ranch, like a homemade ranch dipping sauce with the, like the chicken, basically chicken fried dove almost, I want to call it, or corn nut fried dove. And they came out pretty incredible.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just, but that's me. I always pick a new thing to do. I don't think I have a favorite.
How about you, Brad? What do you lean towards?
You know, I would say the sous vide and grill sear.
Ooh, yeah.
But I've done a few others that were good. Like, once upon a time, I actually made dove barbecue.
Ooh.
That was a deal where there was enough of us. We got enough birds over, you know, a couple of weeks that we did this massive pile of barbecue, and it was actually really, really good. It was,
nice.
I don't know if you've ever had, like, a grilled Canada goose breast that's got just enough of that liver flavor, but you've also gotten, you know, the other sweetnesses, whatever you're actually putting on. It was kind of like that, you know. You had that liver flavor, and you had kind of the smoothness. It almost we did the breast where it was almost like a pate like softness to it, and then you know, just dredged in barbecue, and it was actually phenomenal. I haven't done it since. I don't really remember exactly how it happened. That was back in college, but that actually turned out really well, and then. My brother was up to visit over the summer, and I did, in the oven, I did a braised dove and quail with a red wine sauce, and that turned out pretty well. I overcooked them a little bit, but even having them a little bit dry, they were really, really phenomenal that way as well.
That does sound good. Nice. Colin, have you ventured much into the culinary world with dove?
Aside from what you've cooked and I've tried. Not really. Again, I haven't really gone out for dove that much. In fact, I think the only two times I've gone have been with you when we were in Florida. But, you know, I really like the one that we made, like, the evening after we shot them, and we just made it on the camp skillet and just, like, put a little bit of seasoning and kind of pan-fried them. Or pan heat. It wasn't really a fry, but just put them on the skillet and cooked them to, like, a medium
just,
rare.
Just, like, seared them up.
Yeah, pans here.
Yeah, and it was.
Yeah, I think it was. Didn't we even do them? We did it in the jet boil too, didn't we?
Yeah, we had like a pan over the jet boil. And
yeah, on the jet boil. Yeah, I remember that.
And yeah, it was delicious. I mean, it was all the flavor there, a little bit of seasoning and everything. And yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah, because that was Zoe's first time, my daughter's first time at having the dove when we were there. Oh yeah, that was a fun trip.
Yeah.
That's a good memory. I'm looking here at one of the recipes on the list, and this one was recently that Daniel Kentworthy submitted and we published of his dove and cream sauce.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like a one skillet wonder, but I was looking through the steps on the preparation here, and one thing that like stands out to me a lot is he does the spatchcock on the doves, which I think is like a phenomenal way because it cuts down on the cooking time, but it also like kind of gives a more even cook, so you don't have to worry about drying it out. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah, I did that on the chicken fry.
Nice.
Same concept.
Ooh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm excited to see this recipe. Very, very much am. But Daniel does a good job. He's got like a nice little sauce too. So I think that's pretty cool.
No. It looks great. It looks great. You really did a good job on this one.
I'm excited to try that too. Man, I love good dove recipes. So, yeah, I guess with that, I think we've covered a lot. Oh, I will say, let's talk quickly. Have you guys ever had any of the offal, or the offal, sorry, depending on how you plant it, from dove?
No, I actually have not.
So,
I have not.
Got some tiny hearts in there.
Yeah, here's a story for you. So roll back to like 9-10-year-old Justin with his Red Ryder BB gun in Oklahoma, and I'm out there with my BB gun, and up on the power line I see a dove, and I decide to shoot it with my BB gun, and lo and behold, my aim is true, and the dove falls, and I grab it and go running to my grandpa, and I'm like, look at this dove. And he's like, well, you know what you got to do now, son? And I was like, what? He's like, well, we got to pluck it and you got to eat it. And I was like, well, okay.
What?
And so he, you know, we start cleaning the dove. And first thing he does is he pops out the dove heart. And he's like, you want this? And I'm like, no. And then he just pops it in his mouth. Eats it right there on the spot. And it's like, yeah. I never got the opportunity to talk more with him about it. But, it's like always a memory that stands in my mind. And later on, we went. My grandmother like made the. She didn't make dove poppers, but she like battered them and fried them like, you know, like chicken fingers or something like that. But that memory always sticks with me. And since then, I always think about the hearts, but I've never, because they're so small, I've never thought about them. But then, as I've been researching the recipe for the class that I'm teaching tomorrow, kind of like I think it's yakitori style, like the Japanese. It's based kind of off a chicken heart recipe, what I'm doing. But I think if you had a mess of dove hearts, you could probably prepare it in the same exact way on a skewer with some nice tangy sauce, and it would probably be equally as edible. You just would need a lot of them. So, I don't know. Just a thought about dove hearts.
Sounds good. I mean, you just need a whole mess of them.
Yeah. You just need a lot of them.
Yeah.
I mean, but I feel like that's definitely something that people aren't going to be holding on to. If you're out with a group of friends dove hunting, like, you can be like, hey, man, I'll take all your dove hearts.
Yeah, for sure.
There's something to think about. But I couldn't think of anything else. Even probably all the other organs would be super small on a dove, so the heart may be the only thing worth saving. But... just a thought. I'm trying to mix in more of the offal as we move through all our various hunting seasons here this year.
Yeah.
So
it's some of the best. It is some of the best.
It's good food for thought too, because I'm curious. So if people out there, if you have tried it, let me know. Send us a note. What's cooking at harvestinature.com, and we want to know the story. Maybe we'll pick your brain a little more. But with that, I think we're running out of time here, so we'll do one last round to do any misfires, alibis, or last notes. So I'll actually go in reverse order this time, and I'll send it over to Brad. Brad, you got a last spot for us?
Yeah, some of the stuff we didn't get a chance to cover as far as the hunting experience, you know, like decoying for doves and whatnot.
Oh, yep.
Man, that's a super effective tactic, and you don't have to be a master at it. Like, when I started out decoying doves, it was like, well, you just go stick them out here, right? And actually, yeah, it works. You know, if you set up a decoy spread right, it works even better. But it's just a whole other level of I guess, excitement and complexity to the dove hunt that's pretty easy to get, and it's effective. And so I imagine if the listeners have come along this far, they're already interested in dove hunting. But, if it's somebody new and you're thinking about giving it a try, don't be shy about throwing out some decoys. You know, I started with, like, 4, and now I've got patterns that cut a bunch more wood decoys, and I don't know how many mojos I've got, and it's just a whole lot of fun.
So you have some wood decoys.
As of right now, I have wood decoys that are sketched on wood to be cut out.
Okay.
Oh, nice.
There's a guy in Georgia. I don't know if y'all have followed Missing Sucks on Instagram. Charlie Jordan does this annual wood decoy migration, and so I got in on that this year, and he shipped me a bunch of decoys that I'm using. I'm going to ship them out to North Carolina next week.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it's kind of like to keep awareness of the tradition of hand carved decoys and whatnot.
Yeah.
So now I was like, well, I'm gonna do some of these too to throw into the mix for fun. But anyhow, yeah, the whole decoy spread thing is a whole lot of fun, and anybody can try it. And you know, doves are such a versatile hunt. Like you can use your retrievers to go out and pick up your birds and whatnot. So yeah, just a plug for hunting doves in September to kick off the season.
Yeah, yeah, no, I did want to talk about them. So I noticed Wade and Rachel over at Elevated Wild, I think one of them have been working. I've been watching their progress on social media. They've been hand-carving some of their dove decoys to use this year, and I was kind of waiting to see if their success or not. But I didn't know that there was a little group doing – or not me, I won't say little – a group doing the dove decoy migration. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat.
Such a neat concept. But, all right, Colin, I'll roll over to you. Last thought.
I have two. One's a thought, one's a question. First of all, Brad has the best upland hunting photos on Instagram. So if you don't follow
appreciate
Brad,
that. Yeah.
Feathers Uplands, go give him a follow because
yes.
His photography out in Washington, in the upland of Washington, is pretty fantastic. And then, seeing as all three of you are very proficient game bird cooks, how should I cook this pheasant that I have in my freezer?
Ooh.
Mm. So, I've got a recipe that I submitted through Corey that's going to get published this fall, and it's I think it's something like... I can't even remember what I titled it now, but basically the premise is mushrooms, cream sauce, red wine,
and
it's freaking phenomenal.
All right.
Holy smokes.
That sounds pretty
good.
Best
pheasant I've ever had in my life. So I'll be happy to send that over if you're interested.
I'm a big fan of mushrooms, and it is mushroom season here down in Oregon.
Yep.
So
that sounds incredible.
Yeah.
That sounds
yeah.
incredible.
All right.
Ooh, that does sound good.
Cool. I think that answers that. I'll keep an eye out for that. No, what do you got, Justin?
I don't know. I was trying to come up with something. I haven't actually cooked pheasant too often. I think I'm going to go with my own go-to. Pheasant schnitzel, Colin, because I know you like schnitzel.
Yeah, I do like schnitzel, yeah. That's right. All right.
Okay. Oh, gosh. I did. You know what? I did a pheasant recipe for BHA. I can't remember what it is, though. I don't know. Ara, do you have one? Do you have a suggestion? I'll look this up real quick.
You know what? Right off the top of my head, no. But, like, the first thing that I would think of to do it is, like, open it up and flatten it out, kind of make a roulade out of it.
All right.
And not just full-blown. But that might be a little bit more detailed of a recipe. So you would open it up kind of like you fillet it open and then kind of hammer it down so it's more like a schnitzel, and then stuff it with peppers and maybe peppers and basil and like a sautéed veg, and then roll it up and then truss it and then sear that bad boy. It would be a it's a little bit more of a detailed recipe, but I
like
mean I'm really into Brad. Yeah, I'm into Brad's pheasant with the mushrooms and the wine, and I mean you can't go wrong with something like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes highlighting the natural flavors of things and just letting a few ingredients do the work is always best.
All right.
I found mine.
All right.
The recipe I did for BHA, and I did it back in March of this year. So I started working on a little project with them for the Armed Forces Initiative, where I was doing, like, different historical dates or service birthdays and trying to adapt a recipe to, like, be wild game but also represent whatever historic day or service birthday is going on. And so this one I did roasted pheasant with peanut sauce. And this is a play on back in Vietnam, they had it was called the Charlie Ration Cookbook. And the Charlie Ration Cookbook was sold by the Tabasco Company and was a way to take different components of the Charlie Rations, which were later replaced by the MRE, and create, like, some sort of edible meal. And so you could buy, I think it was, like, a couple bucks, and they would send it, you know, to whatever soldier you wanted to. But some of the recipes and they were like foxhole dinner for two or ceasefire casserole, but this one was chicken with peanut butter sauce, and it stood out. And I was like, that, first off, that's really interesting. Two, I think we could sub the chicken for pheasant pretty easily. And so that was it. You just use a couple cups of chunked or shredded cooked pheasant. So you could grill it, you could braise it, you could do whatever you want to do with it. And then you essentially make this like peanut butter sauce, which is like peanut butter, soy sauce, honey, sriracha, Tabasco, teriyaki. And then you mix that, kind of coat it in there, reheat the pheasant mixed in with the sauce so it kind of like binds to it, and then serve it over rice. And it's like
nice,
phenomenal. It's really good. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I remember when you did that series for them, so... Yeah, it's a good one to check out, too.
I like it.
Hopefully in the next, month or so, I'll have a couple more to try out all three of your recipes.
You should try to do a little, like, dry age. I know we could go down a long road of, like, aging birds. We could go down that road, but, maybe we should next time. We could do a whole episode on that. But, think about that, too, about aging it. A little bit. That's a very common thing to do. But let's see. All right, I'll give you last thought.
If you haven't gone dove hunting before, I would encourage you to go and try it. It's not like any other bird hunting, I can say. It is like you said, gray feathered mini missiles. It's insane. And the way they fly, it's kind of unexplainable. I mean, you can go out for quail and chucker and pheasant and be like, yeah, I'm a great shot. And you go out for dove, and when you see, like, you shoot and they will dodge your bullet, you're like, I just need a different pattern. Let me change my choke. No, let me change the you. I mean, they're just crazy.
Shotgun
and it's a
work.
Fun experience. Yeah, this shotgun, is this thing even shooting? I can feel it, but I don't really know. I don't know what to do. It's an experience, and even when you don't get a lot of birds, it's still a lot of fun. So I encourage everyone to go try it at least once. It's super fun.
Yep.
I'm really glad that you mentioned birds dodging shot, because I swear I've been racking my brain for years on just how in the world a bird that I swear should be hitting the ground is just did a wing dip and flew away. It's like, how is that possible?
Maybe it's like the same concept of like, when you swat a fly with a fly swatter, there's no air to like push the fly away.
Yeah.
But when you swat it with your hand, the force from your hand moves the fly. I don't know.
It's crazy.
Science.
Or just crazy skills.
Yeah, I was say, or skill. There's a reason that bird's alive.
That's right.
It's probably that bird that was banned in 1968.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Okay,
seen a few rounds.
See the pellets.
Like an F-18 out there. It's crazy.
All right. Well, thank you guys for hopping on tonight. Definitely, we talked a lot. I love the dove game, or the dove sound game. So congrats to Ara for being our dove calling champion.
We'll get that back to somebody.
And cool dove facts and everything else. We kind of talked through some techniques, some tips, some experiences we've had in the world of hunting the gray-feathered mini-missiles. But, triumph or defeat, it's all the same. We're out for a good time, and I'll echo what Ara said. And if you're looking to get out, if you've never been hunting before, dove's a great way to do it. It doesn't cost much. Shotguns are relatively inexpensive. I think shotgun ammo is still relatively inexpensive compared to other ammos. So, get out and have fun, be safe, and, learn to pluck birds and avoid dove poppers. But with that, all the show notes will be online, and head over to social media. Make sure you're following Harvest of Nature on whatever platforms you're on. And as always, punch that 5-star button. Tell us what we're doing wrong, or, tell us what we're doing right. Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.